welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden era. Mark Levonier, your host for an hour of science fiction. Later on, a tale from favorite story from 1947. But first, it's a broadcast of Proudly We Hail, called A Matter of Time, from January 6th, 1952.
Proudly We Hail. Proudly We Hail. Now, another Proudly We Hail, one of radio's outstanding dramatic half hours, transcribed coast to coast in cooperation with this station and presented by your Army and your Air Force. From Radio City, New York, here is your host and star on Proudly We Hail, the distinguished star of the theater, screen, radio, and television, Conrad Nagel.
Thank you, Kenneth Banghart. Hello, everyone. Welcome again to Proudly We Hail.
Quite an intriguing title of our story, Conrad, A Matter of Time. What's it all about?
Well, it's not only an intriguing title, Ken, but an intriguing story, too. A science fiction drama with a surprise ending. Our first act curtain will rise in a few minutes after this very important message.
I'd like to point out that every woman in the United States has a definite part in the stepped-up program of national defense. Young women between 18 and 34 who can qualify are urgently needed for service in the Women's Army Corps. Volunteer today.
And now with your star, Conrad Nagel, in the role of Mark Costain, your Army and your Air Force present the Proudly We Hail production, A Matter of Time. Time, the riddle of the universe, the track on which the film of our lives passes. Time, a dream, a miracle. Time, like the strong flow of a river, moving, moving. But to where? To reach out and stop time. Yes, to stop it. Chain it and tame it, and then turn it around and trace its course back through the ages. Such has been the dream of some men. But it took the genius of Dr. Philip Rutledge to make it more. And a dream.
Doctor? Dr. Rutledge? Here's Mark Costain.
Oh, Mark, it's good to see you. Wait just a moment while I shut this off.
Well, Dr. Rutledge, good to see you, too. It's been a long time.
Yes, I know, I know. One becomes absorbed in his work, and then suddenly it's 5 years later. Sit down. How about a drink?
No, thank you.
Ah, well, how's your work been going? I think I saw some of your photographs in the magazine not long ago.
Oh, the series on the Belgian Congo?
Yes, very good. You certainly have a talent. So graphic, so detailed.
Oh, nothing to it, Doctor. You just look through a finder and take the picture.
You're too modest, like your father was. Tell me, are you... Still interested in anthropology as well?
Well, you might call it a sideline or a hobby. My photographic work keeps me on the go.
Well, what are you up to now?
Well, as a matter of fact, you called me between assignments. I've got a week to do nothing.
Well, good. I may have a very unusual assignment to offer you while you're doing nothing.
Well, that's a fine way to spend a vacation.
Well, I think I can promise you a vacation like none you might have dreamed of.
Well, in that case, I'll be quiet and listen.
Two things you must realize now. One, I'm not mad.
Oh.
And two, what I say is in strictest confidence. For a number of years now, I have been carrying on experiments in a field which science actually knows little about. They have been conducted on a plane far beyond any... Explains it in brief. I haven't gone into detail because I'm sure your knowledge in the field is...
Is limited to the ticking of a clock.
Well, be that as it may.
It's not the simplest thing in the world to digest. Sounds like an H.G. Wells story.
Now, I know. A century ago, if a big commercial airliner had flown over your head, you'd have thought yourself mad. The dreams of yesterday are the realities of today, especially in the world of science.
Well, there's one thing I can't help wondering.
Huh?
Why have you told me all this? Not just because you and Dad were close friends.
Certainly not. If I'm able to accomplish what sounds like the impossible, I want to bring back proof. Mark, you're one of the best photographers in the country. You can supply the proof.
Oh, you want me to go with you on this journey?
I do. If you'd rather not, I'll find someone else.
Well, you realize it sounds fantastic.
Of course.
To go back into time. To see all that's gone by. To take pictures of events that... Can you imagine publishing a photograph of Napoleon after Waterloo? Of Caesar before the Roman Senate?
It won't be quite like that.
Oh. Well, how do you mean?
Well, for 25 years, I've been at work on this project. I've overcome many obstacles, but there are some that still stand in the way. It'll only be one trip. And there'll be no way of knowing just what period of history we'll come to rest in. At the end of the trip, the forces that made it possible will be exhausted, and there can be no second journey. At least in my lifetime. Morley, my assistant, and his daughter Lisa will carry on my work, but even so, it would take them a quarter of a century to be ready to try it again.
I see. One round trip ticket, that's all we get.
Exactly.
And to where, we don't know.
We'll have to take our chances.
Look, is there any chance that once having gone back into the past, we won't be able to return to the present?
There's always that chance, but I'm confident it's a small one. The principle is somewhat like a plane flying on a beam. With certain signals to guide it, the plane has no trouble following the beam to its destination. The same applies to us. Only in our case, there's no way of telling where the beam will end. However, when the time comes for us to return, the origination of our beam will be in the present. So it'll be just a matter of following it to its starting point.
You make it sound simple. When do you plan to start?
Friday. It gives you 3 days to make up your mind.
I don't think I'll need that long.
Oh. I see. Well, Mark, I'm sorry.
I make up my mind very quickly, Doctor. I'll have to go back to town to get my equipment.
Forgive me for misjudging you. Not many would listen to the tale of a madman and agree to accompany him into nowhere.
Oh, I beg your pardon.
You needn't. I'm Lisa Morley. You're Mark Costain, right?
Right.
Philip said you'd be coming out this morning, and as he's busy, he asked me to meet you.
Well, that's very nice of you. And Dr. Rutledge, too.
Well, why don't we sit down?
That's a very good idea.
So you're really going with us?
Us?
Well, yes, of course. Philip, Dad, and myself.
Oh. Well, I guess I'd been thinking of it in terms of just the doctor and myself.
Don't be greedy.
Look, will we be able to mix with the people of whatever time we go back to?
Oh, we're not sure about that. Philip doesn't think so. He thinks we'll be something like spectators at a motion picture that will remain unseen to those around us.
Yes, it might be a bit startling to whomever we pop in on if it was otherwise.
They'd probably burn us as witches.
Oh, if they did that, they'd change history.
I was only joking.
Yes, I know. Yeah, but last night after I left here, you know, I couldn't go to sleep thinking about it. I thought, suppose we go back to any period. And suppose we did something to change history. What would happen then?
Well, if Philip's right, and he usually is, there isn't much chance of it. We'll see it all, but we won't be able to be a part of it. It's very complicated, and it has to do with light rays, and I'm sure you'd be bored silly if I tried to explain.
You call him Philip. It's funny, I never could. Maybe because I've known him ever since I was a kid.
Oh, I think he's the most remarkable man alive today, but I just can't be formal with anyone. And he likes me to call him Philip because it makes me feel younger.
You and your father, have you been with him long?
Dad for 10 years and me for 3.
You know, you certainly do not look like a scientist.
No? What do I look like?
Well, you look more like...
There you are, Mark. I see you're in good company.
The best, sir.
He just told me I didn't look like a scientist.
He's right.
More like a flirt. Mark, this is George Morley, my very able assistant.
How do you do, sir?
Welcome to our happy little group. If we get back to the time of the Magna Carta, I want a dozen prints to pass around to the boys.
Morley's a very dry fellow.
And I'm a very dry girl. What do you say we drink to something?
A most scientific suggestion. I'll gather the necessary chemicals, then we'll show Mark the time chart. As you can see, there'll be plenty of room for all of us.
Yes. It looks like a big bubble.
Well, the operation is very simple. At the moment of departure, when full power has been
generated... But these strange-looking contraptions, they do all that?
As contraptions, they're quite wonderful and represent about 25 years of work.
To Mark, they're contraptions, that's clear enough. Now, this panel here will give us our indications. When they reach the point we're looking for, I'll throw this switch.
We'll be off on our broomstick and a flash of light.
Magic. Better than that.
One way or the other, we'll hope so.
What?
Oh.
Wake up, Mark. Time to get ready.
Cup of coffee, Lisa?
No, thanks.
You, Mark?
Afraid I don't have much of an appetite all of a sudden.
Turn on the dynamos, George.
Right.
Mark, you and Lisa might as well climb aboard. Sit in these two seats, strap yourselves in. Make sure the harness is snug.
Right.
Get in, George. Start giving me the readings.
104 minus. 100 minus. Keep building fast, Philip.
Good, it checks.
85 minus. Starting to switch over. Steam coming in at 60 minus.
Excellent. I'll hold it steady. It won't be long now.
No fluctuations. 20 minus. Maximum approaching. Stand by. F-0, now!
Oh, my head. Dr. Rutledge. Dr. Rutledge, you all right?
What?
Yeah, what happened?
I'm not sure yet.
Here, drink this.
See to the others. See if they're all right.
Miss Morley. Lisa. Lisa, you all right?
What hit me?
Here, drink this.
Can't see out. Window's all fogged up.
I'll rub this one off.
Here. Try some of this, Morley.
What do you see?
We're in some kind of jungle. It looks prehistoric. Everybody all right now? Lisa?
Fine.
Well, then I guess we're ready to have a look around. I don't think whatever life we find here will be able to observe us. Still, we must take precautions. Morley, you and I will carry the rifles. Lisa, you take one pack, Mark the others. Won't hinder your work, will it, Mark?
No, not a bit. Is there any way of knowing how far back we've come?
Well, that instrument there that looks like a recorder will give us the answer, but not until we get back to the present. Now, one thing is vital. Under no circumstances must we separate. We have exactly 24 hours to make our observations. Any questions? Good. Then let's be on our way.
I don't think we'd better go far, Philip. It's awfully thick.
Morley, we'll try to collect as many different specimens as we can. Be sure to stay close to the machine. It'll be dark soon.
Before the light gets too bad. I want to look through there. I won't go far, but...
Look in the sky! Those birds!
Get them, Mark!
Fantastic!
Idiots like huge bats.
They certainly move fast enough. Well, I'll see you all a little later.
Don't go too far, Mark.
I'll go along with him to make sure he doesn't.
All right. But watch your step. Even though it appears we can't be seen, we don't want to stumble into anything.
Yeah, take this compass.
Hey, haven't you noticed? Compasses don't work in this never-never land.
Hadn't we better be starting back?
Yeah, in a minute. Let's just sit down here and see what happens.
Taking a lot of pictures.
Yes, all I can. They should certainly create some sort of sensation.
There's something terrifying about it all. I feel like screaming. Are we really sitting in a prehistoric jungle that grew 50,000 years ago?
Well, don't you think it would have been just as frightening to have found ourselves in a more civilized time, say the Golden Age of Greece?
No, they were people. Not much different from ourselves, really. It would have been thrilling to have found ourselves in any age but this. If we came upon men, they'd be something like these awful animals trying to tear each other to bits.
Yes, I must admit, it isn't quite what I expected. Gives you the creeps, all right.
Philip said that you're quite an authority on anthropology. Have you any idea what age this really is?
No. No, Lisa, I haven't. It's baffling. I guess it shows how little we really know about prehistoric times. Because, frankly, I haven't seen anything that I recognize as having existed in all the ages that I've ever studied.
I can't understand it. Who ever heard of a jungle that was quiet after dark?
It's an eerie kind of quiet, like it's waiting.
If only we hadn't come back so far.
You've accomplished the impossible. You mustn't feel badly, old man. One time's as good as another.
Even with the specimens you've collected and the pictures I've taken, I'll wager you won't find many who will believe us.
Let them think what they want. We'll have the proof.
You said we had to leave before 24 hours were up. Why is that?
The beam we traveled on will start fading then. It'll fade rapidly at its source, and the more it fades, the farther we'll be from the present.
If we left a second late, we wouldn't get all the way back. And if we don't get back, we'll be lost in a kind of time vacuum all the rest of our lives.
Like ghosts. Who can see but can't be seen.
Oh. What was it?
I don't know. It didn't sound like an animal cry to me.
It sounded human. Looks like I go with you, Mark.
A lucky man. I always get the short straw.
You and I will hold down the fort, Dad. Shoo the dinosaurs away.
All right, to be on the safe side, I think we should return to our starting point at the 23rd hour of our stay. And that leaves us a total of 6 hours in which to do our exploring. However, to be on the safe side, we'll make it 5. If we're not back here by 10 o'clock, start sending up those flares. If we should run into trouble, we'll do the same.
Please don't run into any, and please don't get lost.
Well, Doctor, what do you make of it?
I don't know. I just can't believe. But they look like ruins, man-made.
If only we had more time, we could try and get a better look at them.
Ah, too overgrown. It doesn't make sense, Mark.
No. No, none of it seems to. But our knowledge of these times...
Mark, there by that clump of bushes.
What?
No, it can't be.
Get pictures, quick. There are 3 of them.
No, 4.
Move closer. There they go.
Hurry.
Watch that ditch.
Oh, Dr. Rutledge. Never mind me. Go on after them.
No, I could never catch them anyway. They ran faster than we could. Doctor, are you hurt?
I twisted my ankle.
Here, let's have a look.
Did you get any pictures?
Yes. But I don't know whether I'll believe them myself.
They couldn't have been any more than 3 feet high.
And they were human beings. Of some sort.
Mark, put me down. We can never make it this way.
We're almost there.
Are you sure of your directions?
Yes. I marked the trail when we came out.
Mark. Oh, over there, they started shooting up flares. Morley! Morley! Lisa!
Watch the flare!
don't remember the jungle being so thick here.
We're coming! Keep shooting them!
Lisa, take the controls. Time almost gone.
We'll get him strapped in first.
Close the port.
Get on the gadgets, Morley. I'll take care of Rutledge.
Should have left me. Maybe too late.
I'm ready for the reading.
Coming in minus 200. Oh, Lord, if it doesn't build fast. Minus 180. Nothing on the screen. Open the port, Lisa.
Are we in time?
Yes. Right back where we started.
Oh, thank heaven. Thank heaven.
Yes. We've got to get a doctor for Rutledge quick. He's in bad shape. Here, give me a hand. Yes, come in.
You finished?
Yes, completely.
What's the matter?
I've been using a camera for a long time now. Luck.
What a blank.
That's right. Every single one of them. Not one picture,
but,
nothing.
But why? What happened?
I don't know, Lisa. May have had to do with, well, with light rays. You understand that sort of thing better than I do. Well, at least we've got the specimens you collected.
No. No, we don't, Mark. In the confusion and the hurry, they were left behind.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Oh. Well, poetic justice, I guess. How's Dr. Rutledge?
I came to tell you. He wants to see you right away. The doctor says that since it's only a matter of time,
oh,
it was
no.
Too much of a strain.
Well, wait here for me.
That you, Mark?
Yes. Yes, Dr. Rutledge.
I'm glad you came. The pictures. You developed them?
Dr. Rutledge, I... Well, they didn't come out, Doctor. Any of them.
Yes, I didn't think they would. I'm glad.
Glad? Glad, but you...
I've got to tell you something. Isn't much time. Only you and Morley will ever know. I wouldn't tell Lisa. We made an error. At least I did. Before we went back, you said maybe 50,000 years.
Well, that was just a guess.
There's no way of knowing for sure, but our calibrations indicate something quite different.
Well, does it really make any difference, Dr. Rutledge?
Yes. Never tell a soul, Mark. It wasn't 50,000 years into the past we traveled, but 5,000 years into the future.
Another program on Proudly We Hail, presented transcribed in cooperation with this station by the United States Army and the United States Air Force Recruiting Service. Proudly We Hail stars Conrad Nagel. This is Kenneth Banghart speaking, and here again is your host and star, Conrad Nagel.
Friends, we hope you'll join us next week over this same station for Proudly We Hail for a tale of the Orient entitled Passage to Bombay, a most mysterious story with some very mysterious people. Until then... goodbye.
Proudly We Hail, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 6th of January, 1952, an Army syndicated broadcast. This is an hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now a story from an author considered to be one of the forerunners in what would become the sci-fi genre, Fitz James O'Brien's story, The Diamond Lens. This was first published in 1858 and dramatized on the Favorite Story series in a syndicated episode from September 20th, 1947.
This is Ronald Coleman inviting you to radio's most dramatic half hour, Favorite Story.
Your sponsor presents Ronald Coleman in Favorite Story. Your sponsor is proud to bring you America's most distinguished actor, Mr. Ronald Coleman, as the host and narrator of this Favorite Story series. Some of the outstanding personalities in America have assisted your sponsor and Mr. Coleman in selecting the exciting dramas which your sponsor will present on Favorite Story. In the weeks to come, you'll hear the story choices of Bing Crosby, Ingrid Bergman, Fred Allen, Shirley Temple, and dozens of others. And now at this point, after your sponsor has presented his opening commercial message, we introduce Mr. Ronald Coleman, who will tell us about tonight's favorite story.
Did you ever hear a piece of music composed for 80 symphony musicians and 4 airplane engines? Well, there is such a symphony, and the man who startled the world with it is the same man who chose this week's favorite story. He's one of the century's most brilliant modern composers, the famous bad boy of music, Mr. George Antheil. The story Mr. Antheil picked as his favorite is one of the maddest fictions ever dreamed for the literary mind. And when you've heard it, I think you'll agree. It's a fantastic yarn about science and insanity. Fitz James O'Brien wrote it, and William Conrad is going to play the leading role. For all of you who love the amazing and the bizarre, here's George Antheil's favorite story, The Diamond Lens.
Like a circus. This fellow Lindley's lecture ought to give us the biggest laugh of the year.
What's so funny about Professor Lindley?
The old fellow's crazy. Cracked on the subject of submicroscopic animula. Look, when he comes to the question and answer period, ask old Lindley if he believes there are any worlds of life beyond the reach of the most powerful microscopes. See what he says. See what he says.
And now, students, we have a few moments left before the end of the lecture period. Are there any questions?
Yes. Professor Lindley.
Yes?
Do you believe that living creatures exist beyond the magnifying limits of our best microscopes?
Why do you ask that question?
Well, I've heard, sir, that you hold definite opinions about subvisual life.
I do. I do indeed.
Professor, what forms do you believe these creatures take?
Human, sir. They have a definitely human form. You may laugh. Others have. But I swear to you that there exists in every drop of water a universe that you dream not of. Other scientists tell you of atoms, of electrons rotating planet-like within these atoms. All this only guessed at, never seen by the human eye. But I tell you, these electrons, like our Earth, have life upon their crust. And I tell you that this life is human.
How do you know these things, Professor?
How do I know? Because I have seen them. I began this research by accident. I was a young man, a student at the university in Edinburgh, just beginning to experiment with a microscope.
On the floor above me lived a rather eccentric young gentleman named Jules Simon.
Lindley? Lindley, are you awake?
Who is it?
Simon, let me in.
Lindley, I've just had the most amazing experience. Do you believe in spirit mediums?
I don't know much about them.
Well, I've just spent the evening with an amazing one, a Madame Vulpes. And believe me, Lindley, I had a conversation through her with my own great-grandfather.
Oh, that's astonishing.
It is astonishing how she cuts through the veil into the other world, almost the way your microscopes bring other worlds within our reach.
Simon, I hope your Madame Vulpes has better contact with her other world than I have with mine.
Oh, you're not discouraged, old man.
Very. Our lenses are such crude affairs. We scientists must be content to grind imperfect glass into imperfect shapes. And beyond 1,000 diameters, our microscopes refuse to show us that other world.
Then I suggest you consult Madame Vulpes. Her door into the other world is not such a narrow one.
You come for a communication, Professor Lindley?
Yes, Madame Vulpes.
From any particular spirit?
A certain man.
Did you ever know this person on this earth?
No, he died long before I was born.
You will seat yourself at the table, Professor Lindley, and place your hands upon it, so.
Yes.
I will extinguish the lamp.
You require complete darkness?
The visitors from the other world insist on it.
Oh.
Now, our hands press on the table. They are strong tonight. You are fortunate, Professor. Will the spirits communicate with this gentleman? They will speak with you. What spirit do you wish?
I should like to speak with the ghost of Anton van Leeuwenhoek.
Anton van Leeuwenhoek, this gentleman wishes to speak with Anton van Leeuwenhoek.
Who calls me? Good Lord.
Are you Anton van Leeuwenhoek?
I am.
The same Leeuwenhoek who invented the microscope?
I am he.
Sir, I'm a lens maker like yourself. Tell me, can the microscope be brought to perfection?
It can. And by you.
But how? I've racked my brain. For the love which you bear to science, please help me.
A diamond.
A diamond?
Of 140 carats, submitted to electromagnetic currents for a long period.
Yes?
Will experience a rearrangement of its atoms. And if you pierce that stone through its axis, you will be able to grind the universal lens.
Will great discoveries come from such a lens?
So great that all which has gone before is nothing. Now I am called. I must go. I must go.
I had the secret. It was logical, intensely logical. All that night I lay awake dreaming of the discoveries I would make with my diamond lens. But where would I find a diamond of 140 carats? The next evening, I decided to enlist the help of my neighbor, Simon.
A diamond of 140 carats? Lindley, the idea is preposterous. There aren't a dozen stones in the world of that size.
Nevertheless, I must find it.
Well, if you're serious,
There's only one place where you'd have the remotest chance of finding it.
Where is that?
Amsterdam. That's where all diamonds go eventually.
Do you suppose that any of the jewelers in Amsterdam will let me borrow a diamond for 140 carats?
Why, of course they'll let you borrow one, Lindley. And all they'll ask you to put up for security is the Grand Duchy of Luxembourg.
Everyone laughed at me, even as Simon did. But the thing had become an obsession. I must build a microscope with a diamond lens. They started calling me Mad Lindley when I bought my steamship passage to Holland. Perhaps I did seem mad to travel in steerage on the mission of a millionaire. Though I begged them in the interest of science to allow me the use of such a diamond. I had no fortune, no patron, nothing but a few guineas and a fantastic theory. And at last I gave up, bought my passage back to Scotland on the next steamer and went back to my lodgings to pack my trunk. There was a folded slip of paper underneath my door. Professor Lindley, if you desire to find what you seek, come tonight at midnight to the yellow brick house on the Borneo Strat.
Yes?
I am Lindley.
Come in, Professor Lindley. You're a few minutes early.
I received your note. I'm very anxious to know if you have what I'm looking for.
How much do you want it?
So much that I would give my life gladly if I might have the use of such a diamond for 1 year.
Well, the gift of your life, my dear professor, is of no interest to me. Come. Mr. Lindley, see what you find inside this small black box.
It is heavy.
Very. Open it. The clasp works easily.
Very well.
I call it the Eye of Morning.
How did you get it?
Is that any concern of yours?
I must have it, sir.
It is yours.
Mine?
With the payment of £1,000,000.
Where would I get such a sum?
Well, if you want this gem as much as I think you want it, you will find a way.
You are right, sir. I do want this stone as much as you think. And I will find a way to have it.
Of course you will.
You recall that I said I would sacrifice my life to own this diamond?
I recall very well.
You should know that I am ready to sacrifice another man's life, too, if necessary.
But surely... No. Stay back.
I want this diamond very much, sir. You know how much.
I have friends nearby. They will hear you.
But a knife is very silent.
No, don't! Go!
On the Borneo Strat. I was already on board my steamer bound for Scotland. And after all, why should they suspect Mad Lindley? There were no witnesses. Oh, yes, there was one. One eye which observed all that happened. The Eye of Mourning.
You know, the ways of the normal human mind are complex and strange, but in the diseased mind, with the subconscious terrifying nature, the brainness. And when that brain belongs to a scientific genius such as Professor Lindley, the power of his thought shatters anything which stands in his way. With Amsterdam behind him, with the stolen diamond in his pocket, Professor Lindley returned by packet to his native Scotland.
back in Edinburgh, I hurried to my room and closeted myself with my prize. There it lay on my work table, the Eye of Morning, one of the largest diamonds in the entire world. Clamping an optician's loop in my eye, I scanned the inside of the gem. I waited. Exactly 140 kept my good fortune, my cleverness. They could call me Mad Lindley now. What did I care? I owned a diamond which was worth the ransom of an emperor. I set to work. I built a large galvanic battery of more than 2,000 plates. This enormous electrical power was fed into a coil of wire wrapped around the iron core of an electromagnet. In the powerful field between the poles of this magnet, I placed the Eye of Morning. Day and night, night and day, for 3 weeks, I subjected the diamond to this magnetic flux. Of course, I could not sleep. My eyes almost never left the gem. It seemed to grow in luster and brilliance. And to my amazement, when there was no light at all in the room, the diamond shone of its own luminescence with a ghostly blue lavender glow. At last, I calculated the molecular rearrangement of the diamond should be completed. I cut off my electrical switches. Then began the most exhausting toil I've ever known. I set about grinding my diamond lens, polishing it to perfection, and then the exhausting and tortuous work of boring the hole through the center of the axis, as Leeuwenhoek had instructed, all with precision to the millionth of an inch. And then at last, after weeks, months of superhuman effort, my diamond lens was completed, and I stood trembling on the threshold of new worlds. My hand shook as I made the apparatus ready. Now, what should be the first object to be scrutinized through this most powerful of all microscopes? Why not the elemental substance, the most common fluid in our everyday lives, a drop of water? I placed a single drop of distilled water on my microscope slide. Then I covered it with a thin film of turpentine to prevent rapid evaporation. I adjusted my lamp, and with a strange mixture of anticipation and dread, I looked through the eyepiece of my diamond lens. I seemed to gaze upon a vast space, the limits of which extended far beyond my vision. Then I made a minute adjustment with my microscope. Suddenly, a many-colored sphere leaped into view. A perfect ball, suspended in space, even as the full moon hangs in the evening sky. It floated nearer and nearer, and it filled the entire field of view. I could see its surface clearly. Mountain ranges and valleys, banks of gaseous clouds and oceans of vapor. This must be the nucleus of an atom, or even an electron. The power of my diamond lens had reached into the very essence of matter. And now the surface of the sphere seemed so close to me that I could see forests and rocks and deserts. And I thrilled to think of what animal life I might observe. A universe was swinging into view, all contained in a droplet of water. My microscope now peered into a greenish glade. I thought I saw a moving shape. Anxiously, I waited for a clearer view. Would it be some animal, some giant insect, a reptile, or something hitherto unknown? At last, the gauzy veils of cloud foliage vanished, and I gazed upon a woman.
I say, a woman? She had the outlines of humanity, but there the resemblance stopped. Her adorable beauty far exceeded that of any mere woman who ever walked our earth. Her eyes were mystic violet, dewy and serene. Her hair flowed out of her proud head like a track of a falling star through the night sky. And the perfect roundness of her limbs formed suave and enchanting curves. And I dare not even attempt to describe her grace of movement, the way she floated effortlessly through the atmosphere of her subatomic world. Insane. You, in the smug complacency of your logic, think I dreamed I saw this lovely creature. Well, you lie. Because you yourselves have never had the ingenuity, the industry to make such a microscope. Because you have never heard of such things, you dismiss them. Is it so incredible that there might be other universes within ours? Is it preposterous that a drop of water resting on a microscope slide might contain a whole Milky Way system of planets, constellations, and galaxies? And is it beyond belief that a shrewd scientific investigator like myself might peer into this minute system and see a living creature? My friends, even as I speak to you now, some super gigantic scientist with eyelashes light years long may be depositing our universe contained in a drop of water on his microscope slide. He may be adjusting his diamond lens to peer in astonishment at you, madam. And he may be falling in love with you. Is that madness? I confess to you, there was a moment when I felt my reason falter, my sanity slipping away. As I watched that beautiful woman through my lens, I knew that here I had found complete perfection in womankind. And I knew, too, that I loved her. I would have given my life to kiss that incredible creature, to embrace her womanly form in my arms. But we were separated by the greatest gulf which ever lay between lovers. I could see her, but she could never see me. I could never let her know that I existed and that I loved her. And then a shadow passed over her face. She hesitated in her dance, and she looked up at me with an expression of great pain. And even as I watched her graceful limbs withered, and she writhed in agony, and her suffering tore at my soul. Yet there was nothing I could do. She was dying before my eyes, yet I could not save her. And the rainbow-colored forest in which she danced was shriveling, too. They twisted about her. They enveloped her. And she disappeared from view. I looked down at the stage of my microscope. And the glass slide was still there. The drop of water was gone, and the whole universe which held my exquisite dancer had evaporated into the night air. How can I describe to you the emotions which flooded in me at that instant? Despair at my loss such a man has never known. Terror at my loneliness. Yes, sheer stark terror at the realization that this creature, who had in these brief hours become more surely a part of me than my own immortal soul, would not return. And then anger, a horrific rising fury seething in my brain against the object which had brought to me this wonder. Now forever lost. For a long, horrible moment, I stood staring at it.
there on the table before me. My diamond lens, made miraculously fragile by the rearrangement of molecules, I had achieved. My lens set with such infinite precision within my microscope. And then a muffled cry within my throat. I raised one of the massive andirons before the fire, and with a strength beyond my own, I struck. Again! 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 And at last, there on the floor beneath my feet were but shattered remnants of the object of my hatred, my diamond lens. And that, young gentleman, is my answer to your question. Do creatures exist beyond the realm of human sight? They do. I, of all the world, have seen them. Good day, gentlemen.
There you have it. The Diamond Lens, the scientific nightmare of a somewhat unrecognized talent in American letters, Fitz James O'Brien.
Favorite story, on Tuned to Yesterday from September 20th, 1947, a syndicated broadcast. And that wraps it up for this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden years. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.